The information included in this podcast is for informational purposes only. Nothing discussed here is intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, and never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you heard on this podcast.
Hello everyone, this is Victoria Porter. I'm a licensed clinical social worker. You're listening to the Healthy Hot Springs podcast from the Razorback Campercell Studios. Health is our most important asset, and on this show, I sit down with local health professionals to discuss opportunities and strategies for you to get healthy hot springs. Pollyanna Elton, she's the community liaison for Hospice Home Care. She's back in the studio to talk about hospice. We talked about kind of the general information of hospice, and there's so much to cover on this topic. So we're going to discuss some perhaps misconceptions about hospice. And I know that you've had that experience as well, Pollyanna. So I think one of the big things that whenever coming onto hospice, one of the big things that I experienced whenever, because I worked in hospice for several years, was that people think that you're going to have a nurse in the home 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And you're nodding, yes. And first, just introduce yourself a little bit in the company just one more time. Sure. In case someone didn't hear the first episode.
Thank you so much. I am Pollyanna Elton. I'm a community liaison with Hospice Home Care here in Arkansas. I'm actually from the Southern Market, from the Monticello office. So I'm here to speak to our listeners about the services we provide here in the state of Arkansas. We also have sister companies across the river in Mississippi and down south in Louisiana as well. But I'm here specifically to speak to your listenership today about Arkansas services.
Wonderful. And so you understood this misconception about the level of care, right?
Yes.
So let's kind of talk about that to start off.
Sure. The way hospice works, Our goal and our design is to support family caregivers in the home. And I think, especially people that have not had direct experience with hospice, with a loved one or friend, they're not very familiar with how the services are administered. So you said a nurse comes in 24 hours a day. I have to tell you an anecdote from last week. One of our case managers came in, and we try to touch base every morning. Before we hit the road, the ones that can, and we circle up and we may share a few stories from the road. So one of our case managers came in, and she said, well, they had my room all fixed up for me and had me a bed made with fresh sheets and everything and said, hey, we got your room ready.
Oh, wow.
So she had to re-educate the family. She had to let them know we're a support service. We come in and support families and family caregivers, but it is not a 24-hour service. Now, that being said, there are instances, and they are very rare, but they do occur from time to time, where a client needs what we call a 24-hour care. It is administered, continuous care is only administered in homes under certain circumstances. If that client is absolutely out of pain control, they cannot get the pain under control, then sometimes we will have a nurse that will go out and administer medication, support the families until that client gets easy again, but it's very rare. Mm-hmm. In fact, we've not done one of those since I've been back. Over a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
And another thing that we do for clients, if they get in a situation where a loved one is in uncontrolled pain and it can't get under control and they need more support, we have what is called a general inpatient service. These are contractual agreements that we make with hospitals to briefly admit a client, to get pain under control, to take care of them in an acute setting because it can't be managed in the home. So continuous care and GIP are other forms of hospice, but they're rarely used. But we do have those available should they be needed.
Absolutely.
Yep.
All right, so let's talk about a normal, let's say you're coming on to hospice. What would a normal weekly schedule be for a typical patient?
And of course, it's going to be disease specific in their needs and their other comorbids, but by and large, they're going to get at least one nurse visit a week.
Which is typically about an hour.
Usually. Yeah. Now, the initial visit's much longer because they have to assess the client, speak with the families, and process the entire admission.
And it may not be as long as, it depends on, again, it's very case specific. You know, your visit may not have to be an hour long, but typically, mm-hmm. the longest that the nurse would be there at one visit is usually about
typically
an hour.
That's right. Yeah. So the nurse visits will be set according to the client's mm-hmm. need clinically. And then, of course, you have your aides or CNAs that we mentioned in our last podcast. Our CNAs are the backbone of what we do because they spend the most time with the clients and families, and they do very intimate things for those clients. They take care of their personal needs. So that's set according to the need as well. Aid visits may be 2, 3, 5 times a week, depending mm-hmm. on the need. But I will say this, as a client becomes more and more imminent or closer to passing, mm-hmm. we usually do increase visits to meet those needs.
Nursing and everybody,
yes.
right? A nurse might come every day.
Sure. If a client yeah. is in the imminent phase and we know that they are not long, then typically we will, you know, and we have call-out nurses, too. So mm-hmm. if it's after hours, and that's something I wanted to mention as well, and I hope I'm not being preemptive.
Yeah, we're right ahead.
But, you know, no matter what's going on with the situation, when a client becomes imminent, we're aware. We have them on the radar. We have our after-hours team notified to let them know. And we actually, we have secure messaging that we talk to each other on all day long. It's, of course, HIPAA compliant, but we stay in communication with each other. So at the end of the day, after 4 o'clock or so, our office manager will shoot out a message, okay, do we have any clients that are imminent? So that our on-call nurses can be aware, because we offer service 24 hours a day as needed. Yeah. So triage line, they can call us. If there's a severe change of condition or a moderate one, they can call us.
All right, and let's talk about that for a second, too. I think a misconception is that you're going to have one nurse. You will have a nurse. Mm-hmm. It will be the same nurse throughout your hospice care, and that is not the case, correct?
Not always. Now, typically, the way we manage, and we like this because it helps our nurses to form relationships with mm-hmm. the clients and families. We try to be area specific.
Right.
So, for example, if we have a particular nurse, we try to help her cover a certain region so that she visits the same clients again and again. And we try to assign that as much as we can. Now, if someone's on vacation, mm-hmm. if they call the triage line, it's after hours, it may not be their typical nurse.
Right.
But we try to do that as much as we can.
And I think that to me, that's the big, issue that a lot of people had. If you call after hours, you are calling an on-call service, right?
That's correct.
You will speak to not your nurse. You will speak to an answering service.
Yes.
And then they are going to contact the nurse that's on call.
That's correct.
And then that nurse will call you back, correct?
Exactly. Yes. It's so dispatched that way.
In my experience, a lot of people, because sometimes in the nature of this work, we're out on our cell phones, right? And we'll call and let people know that we're coming, what mm-hmm. time to expect us. And so they have our phone numbers sometimes. And so they
yes.
would immediately call, you know, if something's up, they would call that nurse even at midnight, even,
right.
on the weekend or whatever. And I would be like, please call the on-call service because
yes.
they have families and they need time off, right?
Indeed.
Yes.
And that's why we have our on-call and after-hours nurses. You guys on the podcast can't see, but I just brought a sample folder for one of our admission packets. We actually educate the families and mm-hmm. provide the number and encourage them always call this number first.
Please.
So that we can administer
yes.
care
yes.
that way and be sure that there's going to be somebody on the other end of the line.
Yes.
Now, we don't encourage our nurses to give out personal numbers. Sometimes people just have them because they know them personally,
mm-hmm.
because our nurses do work specific regions, oftentimes close to where they were born and raised, and they know a lot of the clientele.
True, right.
So we try to make it more personal that way when we can. But of course, like you mentioned, if it's on call, it's going to be the triage RN on the other end, and
yeah.
then she'll contact the on-call nurse.
And I think just please understand that we're all human. We have lives. We love hospice. We love our work, but we have lives.
Yes.
And outside of this work, right? And we need to be able to step back from this. It is difficult work. It's beautiful and meaningful, but
yes,
it is difficult. And we, for our own mental health and self-care, we have to,
yes,
be able to step back from it sometimes and, you know, not have to answer the phone and take a vacation or just be present with our kids at dinner,
sure,
and not answer the phone, right?
Right, indeed. Yeah. And really and truly, and I can say this from a personal standpoint, if that phone rings, if I'm home, I'm going to answer it. It's just one of those things because we care that much about our clients and families. Now,
yeah,
I may direct them to call the triage line or whatever. We don't give out each other's personal information, but it's difficult for me personally because I have such a passion for what I do.
Which is why if you just call that line to begin with, you're not put in that, you know, that dilemma.
That's right.
Of having to
choose.
Phone. Yeah.
Yes, having to choose.
So, all right. I want to address the power of attorney. You have this wonderful, I know y'all can't see it, but Pollyanna brought a 5 wishes packet with her.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically a statement saying, if I am unable to make my medical, verbalize,
mm-hmm,
my medical decisions, I have it in writing, this,
mm-hmm,
is what I want done, and I have appointed this some person, an,
mm-hmm,
agent, to speak on my behalf.
That's correct. We actually offer the 5 wishes packet, and we did when I was with hospice before, back in 2013. 5 wishes is basically an advanced health care directive, I'm sorry, for dummies. We know the books they had a number of years ago, Computers for Dummies. Well, this is an advanced health care directive with step-by-step instructions and questions, pre-prompted questions, and blank spaces so you can fill in personal information.
Yeah.
When this document is filled out in full, signed in ink, in the presence of 2 witnesses, and the person that it's designated for, it is a legal and binding document in 42 states.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no need for an attorney. There's no need for a notary unless you want those things.
All right. So a common misconception about your power of attorney is that
you go girl. No, you go girl. Go ahead and prompt the question. I know what you're going to say.
Is that someone is going to make my medical decisions for me.
Power of attorney is a specific designation that is done through a lawyer. This advanced healthcare directive doesn't require the signature of a POA, just a designated healthcare agent,
right,
somebody that you want to speak on your behalf. Now, if you're talking about true legalities, if you're talking about
financial,
a final person, yes, your estate, your banking information, everything about that is separate and apart from advanced.
From medical.
Yes.
Okay. So there are 2 separate. So a durable power of attorney would cover your finances and those types of things. Medical power of attorney is your medical decisions only.
That's right.
And I have 2 things to say about that. First, it is such a blessing for your family members for you to have this in writing.
Yes.
That they are not having to make a difficult decision. They know what you want done.
Yes.
Right? Because I do grief therapy.
Right? Bless you.
And so people come in after making these heart-wrenchingly difficult decisions without knowing, you know, what their person wanted. And
yes,
it is something that they can feel guilty about or they can regret. Right. So it is such a blessing for you to have your wishes known that you are not putting that onto your loved one to have to make that decision.
Indeed.
All right. And 2, the power of attorney only kicks in if you cannot speak for yourself.
That's right. You must be incapacitated.
Correct.
And that's what a lot of people don't realize. They think, oh, well, I can make that decision later. We recommend in our company, across the company, anybody 18 years or older needs to have one of these filled out.
Absolutely.
We don't know what tomorrow brings. I could get on the highway and head back down to Hamburg and have a car wreck, and that would be that.
Right.
But in doing this, and you don't necessarily have to use 5 wishes. Most physicians, most hospitals will have an advance directive on file that they can share with you.
Right.
But this is truly the easiest one I've ever experienced.
Agreed.
It's wonderful. And what I recommend when I do education about this, I advise families to sit down together at the table, get you a notebook, go line by line, and write your wishes in pencil in the notebook. Once you have everything shored up like you want it, then you can copy it in ink into your booklet and sign it. Now, another beautiful thing about Five Wishes, and these are available online, by the way, for your podcast members, and we have these at all of our office locations for free. There is a small card on the very back page so that once you complete your advanced healthcare directive, you can write your personal information, cut it out, and put it in your wallet. So if EMS picks you up and they go through your wallet, they can find this. Oh, this lady has an advanced healthcare directive on file. We need to look into that. And what I recommend for folks, once they get it filled out, you don't want to lock it away in a box or a safe. You need to give it to someone you trust or keep it in a safe place where they can get their hands on it.
So I would always say, who is going to be at the hospital?
Mm-hmm.
Who would come? That is who needs to have your five wishes.
That's right.
They need to have a copy of that.
They need to have the original. Now, what you can do is take this and make photocopies.
Mm-hmm.
Give a copy to your lawyer. Give a copy to your physician. Give a copy to your kids.
Yes.
And that way, everybody is on the same page, literally. But you have the original so that you can have the legal right to either accept or deny services on behalf of your loved one.
Yeah, I know. This is, so let's just, I just do want to clarify though, because a lot of people would be like, oh, I don't need that because I'm married.
Mm.
So we have to, I think we have to address that because
yes.
So. And technically, that is true. I mean, you would want one in place just so that they're not having to make these medical decisions for you, right?
Yes, it's such kinda, a stressful time.
Yes, it kind of forces you to have the conversation of like, okay, I would want a ventilator, or I would not want a ventilator, or I would want a feeding tube, or I would not want a feeding tube, right?
Right.
So it keeps your spouse from having to make those decisions because y'all have had this discussion.
Yes.
But for the most part, if you, like you were talking about, if you were in an accident and you were driving home, your spouse would be able to make those medical decisions for you. It is imperative, if you are not married, that you have one of these five wishes filled out. Because,
and a person appointed.
Yes, because you are an adult and... So no one can come in. I mean, I don't know if y'all have had this experience or not, but I have, like, when my father's in the hospital, if I am not on his, if I'm not one of his HIPAA-compliant contacts, they will not even update you with information.
They will not. And they've become more and more strict about this in the past 2.5 years. And I understand HIPAA and I understand privacy, but it does make it really difficult for some family members. Now, conversely, it can cut down on a whole lot of meddling because we know when something happens, especially when you have large families and we're all very diverse and we may not all get along, it does allow a level of control over that information. And keeps undesignated people from coming in and trying to take the reins, so to speak. So there's good and bad. There's a good and bad. There's good and bad.
Yeah, very good point.
Yeah.
How many steps do you take if you have a rock in your shoe? Not many. Well, if you have to walk on a prosthetic leg that does not fit, it is like walking with a rock in your shoe. Although there are many innovations when it comes to prosthetic feet and knees, the comfort of a prosthesis begins with the fit of the socket. Michael Kenny is a certified prosthetist who has been walking on a prosthetic leg since he was 16 years old after losing his leg to a motorcycle accident. He is committed to fitting prosthetic legs so they are comfortable, intimate, and optimize ease of walking. Motility Prosthetics has been in Hot Springs since 2015, but Michael Kenny has been building legs for over 25 years. All fabrication is done on site. There are no delays from having to ship to a fabrication house. Adjustments can easily be made on the spot. Motility means the spontaneous ability to move. At Motility Prosthetics, we want you to be able to walk on your prosthetic leg with a sense of spontaneity. Call for a free consultation, 501-620-4800.
Okay, can you think of a, I'm just speaking from my own personal perspective, can you think of a common misconception with hospice?
The first one that you mentioned when we initially started, of course, is that we come in for 24 hours a day. And, of course, we've explained that we're a support system for family caregivers and clients in the home, that our service is not 24 hours. We do have that available in our Comfort Care Center, and you can find out more about that. But I heard this, I go in, what I do, Victoria, I go in and personally visit with families in their homes. And that's all I do. I go and talk to them about palliation, about hospice. And I've actually had people say to me and look me in the face and say, so do you have a nurse that comes in and gives the shot when it's time?
Oh, good point.
I've had that verbalized mm-hmm. to me, to somebody I've known mm-hmm. for years. Mm-hmm. And I just looked at her and I said, no, darling, that's not how hospice works.
That's illegal.
Indeed. You know, I don't want to say the dreaded K doctor name, but no, that's not what we do. We actually support families, but we don't do that. We don't give a quote-unquote final dose of medicine. That does not happen. There are instances when we have clients that are nearing end of life, when they're imminent. It may be that when they are given a dose of medicine, it relaxes their little body to the point mm-hmm. where they finally slip away. And that's a common misconception, because that does happen frequently. It does.
Yes, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I really hadn't even thought about that, because it is a major hurdle, I think, that mm-hmm. that a lot of people have, that, you know, hospice, well, they come in and they're going to kill my loved one.
Oh, dear. Right? Yes. People still believe that, Victoria. It amazes me, but goodness.
I know,
that's why we're here.
It is so to do this. Opposite
yes.
of what's happening.
Right.
And I think a great way that I have been able to kind of direct loved ones at that when it's becoming imminent, right?
Mm-hmm.
Death is imminent. I think if you ask, is it changing the outcome, right? Because the outcome is that they're dying.
And that's a fact. That's right.
Of what medications they are taking,
yes.
right? And the medications are only to make them more comfortable. We
yes.
don't want to see our loved ones suffer.
That's right.
And so medications help with comfort level only.
Yes.
They do not hasten any death process in any
no.
way. The
no.
outcome is the same, period.
That's right. And it's so difficult. And I see families struggle with this, and it breaks my heart, because I was that family member once upon a time. Mm-hmm. I cared for my parents until they passed away. And even having all the experience I did in hospice, when that's your dad or your mom,
mm-hmm.
something happens to that professional, they kind of go out the window, and that little child comes back.
The emotional steps in, yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
And sometimes we forget the way things really work. But I would love to stress to your listeners that we're there to support, to guide. And just since you mentioned the medications that we use, we have special medications. We have liquid medications that can be administered very simply. When our nurse is going to do the admission, they educate the families on how to administer the medicines.
Mm-hmm.
But still, after all the education and the reassurance, families are still afraid to give those medications. And unfortunately, and we had a situation happen last week, one of our client caregivers refused to give the medication to their loved one. And as a result, they were in uncontrolled pain and severe discomfort, and they called and asked for the nurse to come out. She went out and re-educated them yet again and explained, these medicines, oh, I don't want her to become addicted. We hear this all the
yes.
time.
Yes.
Your loved one needs comfort.
Yes.
If they become dependent on a medication for a short time, that's okay. We want them to be comfortable.
Focus on the outcome.
Yes.
I mean, does it really matter if I mean, not that, I don't want to say this in terms that, oh, they are going to become addicted, but so what? I mean,
They have a terminal diagnosis. They need assistance.
Right. And I think the difference is, I know I really helped one of my patients with this because she herself was reluctant to take medication because
right.
she didn't want to become addicted. And, you know, I think we, our bodies, if we are in severe pain, our bodies are going to react differently to taking a pain medication mm-hmm. than if you're not in pain and taking a pain medication.
That's right.
I've seen it.
Yes.
Someone who's in pain and takes the pain medication, they become themselves.
Mm.
Someone who's not in pain and takes the pain medication,
they become someone
themselves.
Else.
Right.
Indeed. Indeed. Right. And it's a process. Sometimes we start them out with a lower
right.
dosage to get them accustomed
right.
and to show them, okay, this is not working. This is not maintaining your pain control.
Right.
Would you be willing to try a low-dose patch? That way you don't have to worry about swallowing a pill or actually administering
yeah.
and you get continuous care. Depending on the diagnosis, we will use some patches for pain control according to the client's need. And it's all overseen by our medical directors. So this is, we're not just doling out medicine willy-nilly. This is all mm-hmm. very strictly regulated.
Very.
And
very.
Just to mention, so in case your clients or families out there are wondering what happens to the medication once a client dies.
Oh, good.
We have to waste it. We have to waste it a certain way and dispose of it properly in a way that nobody else might be exposed to the medicine or be harmed by it.
Mm-hmm.
That is a big part of what we do. We must be compliant completely with that
yes.
and account for every
yes.
drop of that medication.
Yes, and it is monitored
yes.
very closely.
Very closely.
Yes.
Very.
Mm-hmm. And I want to circle back to the staff visits real quick.
Okay.
The nurse is in there weekly. The CNA is in there weekly.
Yes.
Chaplain and social worker are in there how often?
It depends on the need of the client or the family's request. We I don't know the standard for visits for those disciplines, but, you know, it's set according to client need. If they...
Right.
Maybe somebody does need more spiritual support. Maybe they would request that Brother Andy come 2 times a week instead of
mm-hmm.
one. Or if there's a specific need, could you ask Tamara to come see us because we need help filling out some paperwork.
Mm-hmm.
And we accommodate for that. We try to accommodate. I know they have their regular visits, but at the same time, if there's a little more time needed, we can allow for that.
Absolutely.
We can allow for it.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it's ever-changing.
It is.
Yeah.
The whole process, it evolves from beginning to end because the needs of the client and the family evolve as well.
Right.
They change continually, and we try to make those adjustments with them.
And I'm thinking about final plans, funeral plans, you know, that type of thing.
Yes.
So I think a lot of people don't understand how that process works. Do you want me to introduce that or do you
sure.
have a, okay,
please
so,
let me know what you got on your
okay.
mind.
Yes. Yeah, so I know a lot of times, well, first of all, people were reluctant to make their funeral plans.
Sure.
I will say that usually changed, you know, as time went on. A lot of people come into hospice, like I said, maybe not their doctor or physician not really having that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And they're coming into hospice really kind of clueless about what's going on. And,
yes.
You know, and if we come in and we start talking about, you know, your final wishes and your power of attorney and your funeral plans.
Sure.
You know, sometimes that can be a bit overwhelming, and that's okay. We can wait. In my experience, those things typically family and patient themselves would want to talk about that closer
sure.
as you know, they become closer to end of life. But making your funeral plans and signing this final wishes does not mean you are giving up hope.
No. It means that you're ably equipping yourself for the best case scenario in the future.
And having your funeral plans, some people have their funeral plans 20, 30 years in advance.
My dear mother had every jot and tittle. I'm telling you, bless her heart.
Yes.
I needed that.
And it was such a blessing for
yes.
you, right?
Huge.
Yes.
Huge.
So please do not associate making your funeral plans or whatever that looks like anymore.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many. I found a book recently where, you know, like if you choose cremation, like you can have your ashes put into a record. I mean, there you know, there.
I've heard of trees. You can do trees and records and all different types of things.
Yes, it is so amazing, the many options. And your social worker could help you figure out those plans.
Yes.
I think that's a common misconception that I'm making my funeral arrangements or I'm signing these, five wishes paperwork means that I'm giving up hope.
Right.
That is not the case. It means you are... I think that most people have a sense of kind of calm once the stuff is in place, that they can just enjoy the time that they have left. Focus
Indeed.
On what's important, right?
Absolutely. For me, and this is me personally, and I think it's true for most people, if they're honest with themselves, education takes away fear. When you prepare, when you know what to expect, when you've read all the booklets, when you've seen it happen with your loved one before your eyes just like they said it would, you become reassured. And I think the more we can educate families and clients on what to expect, it takes away the fear.
Mm-hmm.
And the planning takes away the stress and the fear
mm-hmm.
of what's coming down the line. You know you're ready. You know you're prepared. You know your loved one's needs are going to be met. And that their wishes are going to be honored. And there's no more beautiful thing than that. Yes, it can be. It's painful. The loss is painful. But just knowing that you honored them in life and in death means so much.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great tool for families. Really good tool.
And like I said, we're just here to normalize this conversation.
Yes.
That dying is just as much a part of life as birth, right?
We
celebrate these births and there's such joy surrounding that. Let's bring that to this other process, this end of life process, right?
Indeed.
There's so much beauty to be had there. So again, thank you so much, Pollyanna Elton, for coming in to talk about hospice in general. I feel like we've covered so much good stuff.
Yes.
But from Hospice Home Care, just provide a little information. Are you guys on social media?
We are.
Okay.
You can look for us. Of course, we're on Facebook at all of our local sites. We have our Little Rock location and our Comfort Care Center. They have Facebook pages. But we do, of course, have our website. It's hospicehomecare.com. And you can click there. You can take a tour of our Comfort Care Center. We have lots of photographs. You can see where all our different locations are. Of course, I did bring our map today, but that gives a general idea of the areas we cover in Arkansas.
Most of Arkansas,
yeah. And, of course, we have contacts here, but those are all on the website. Again, hospicehomecare.com.
Okay.
You can also find links. If you're interested in Five Wishes, just put it in your search bar, Five Wishes. You can actually get those free online, or you can visit one of our office locations and get free ones as well.
And what's that? Give me your office phone number. I know everybody, all the numbers will be different.
Yes, they will. Now, our Monticello office number is 870-367-9008. We also have toll-free 800-479-0756. But you can just go online, type in Hospice Home Care in your search bar, and it should give you a variety of locations. And, of course, you can find everything you need on our website at hospicehomecare.com.
Wonderful, Pollyanna. Thanks again for coming in to speak to me. I think hospice is obviously close to both of our hearts. Such an amazing, amazing service.
Yes.
Doing wonderful work that is so needed.
I agree. Thank you, Victoria. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Healthy Hot Springs from the Razorback Camper Sales Studios. Join us every Wednesday as we discuss a different topic related to keeping hot springs healthy.